You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 645, only five episodes away from episode 650, which we have no plans whatsoever formulated yet, so we better start cracking. And more, what you do for episode 650, because we actually are getting kind of close to the deadline, so what should we do?
That snuck up. I didn't even realize we were getting to that point. I think we should do something absolutely nuts. I think we should have like some sort of spectacular. I don't know what, but just a spectacular, you know? Either like very like fireworks. We should set off fireworks.
I do like spectaculars. I'm all about that.
We should do a musical.
So I mean like a musical.
Oh my god. We should do a musical.
We could, but that is if you want to orchestrate, that's fine with me. I will do a sound or music episode again, but not right now. They take a massive amount of work. The Christmas special, which I love doing, takes so much, like literally like maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks worth of work, like a lot of work. So, So I'm not opposed to that.
We could do a game show. We could do Punk's Points. We could do a contest of some sort. I don't know of what, but like we could do something. Might be kind of fun.
We could do a bunch of game shows. We could do like Punk's Points and other game shows that we invent. That might be interesting.
I'd be up for that. It's just like a very fast paced cycle through guests.
Yeah, there was a game show. Hollywood Squares and Match Game or something. They combine two game shows together. So we could do something like that. I'm not opposed to that.
Match Game's fun. Heck yeah. But, like, we should have the, like, for the trivia stuff, we should have Extremely Easy. And then, like, how with the last Punk's Points, people were like, oh, the last ones are really, really hard. We should have, like, a bonus round where it's just, like, near impossible questions. Like Final Jeopardy.
I'm actually all about that. I was actually thinking of like some ultra insane tough questions that like no one could get. But if they get like one, then they like basically win the game. You know what I mean? I'm all about that. So
yes.
That's an idea. That's an idea. So
that'd be fun.
Yeah. Anyway, so maybe we'll do that. So anyway, M Moore, what's happening to one of M Moore? What do you got going on? Did you just happen to have a podcast special post just now, coincidentally?
Oh my gosh, yes, now that you mention it. It's a bonus episode of M Moore Tells You What to Listen To, and this one is New Friends Fest edition. So New Friends Fest is this really, really super awesome DIY festival in Toronto that's happening the first weekend of August, so the 4th to the 6th, at Lithuanian House on Bloor Street, which is a really, really cool venue. So on the episode I play songs from almost every band. There's one band called Heavenly Blue who don't have any recordings out right now, but I'm really excited to see them live because I've seen a couple like live things from them, so that's going to be really cool. And also Roman Candle, who were supposed to play the fest, they're from Las Vegas. They are a really neat like screamo band. They formed like last year. They couldn't make it because of visa issues, so they've been replaced by Burial Etiquette, which is a really awesome like band out of Thunder Bay in Ontario, which is super cool. So there are so many bands like Here's Us headlining, Page 99, Golfers playing, Life in Vacuum, Piper Maru, who I'm super stoked to see. There's so many just like great, great bands, and I can't wait. There's like a pool thing, a park and a pool thing. There's karaoke. There's an emo night. There's like a photo booth and a DIY merch swap. So I have like a bag of merch I'm gonna take and swap for other stuff. So hopefully someone will like my stuff and give me extra. But I'm super stoked. I can't wait. I'm really, really excited. I've never been to this festival before, but I've seen pictures, and I just can't wait. I'm super stoked. So go listen to it, get hyped, and if you meet me there, maybe we'll be new friends.
Well, sounds like a blast. I saw Hers maybe 3 weeks ago, and they were, I mean, I've seen them before, but Hers really is amazing. Definitely a band to catch. So yeah, and maybe one day they'll play a Punk News show. They almost did play Summer Soiree 5, but it just didn't work out. But maybe Summer Soiree 7. At any rate, enough about me. Let's talk about the news in the world of punk. Oh, here's some news for you. Anti-Flag broke up out of the blue. Everyone was totally shocked. Last week, Anti-Flag deleted all of their... Edward, do you say Anti-Flag or Anti-Flag? What do you say? Anti-Flag or Anti-Flag? What do you say?
Anti-Flag.
Well, you're not going to say it for much longer because last week the band suddenly deleted all of their social media out of the blue. I believe they deleted their website as well. Basically, any online presence they had at all. Their Patreon said, Anti-Flag is over. We're going to switch this to non-free, and then we're going to delete it at the end of the month. And everyone was like, what happened? And I think a lot of people thought maybe they got in some huge fight or whatever. And then about 12 to maybe 12 hours, actually, yeah, just about 12 hours later, a lot of people online referenced the latest episode of the Enough podcast. The Enough podcast is run by Kendra Sheets, who runs The Bad Copy. And the purpose of that podcast focuses on sexual assault stories and those kinds of things. And so a lot of people said the latest episode of the Enough podcast, the alleged perpetrator matches the description of Justin Sane of Anti-Flag. And so a lot of people were like, oh, well, it must be Justin Sane is accused of having committed a sexual assault or a rape of one or more young women. And that's why the band is breaking up. However, a lot of people got weirded out because they didn't release a statement for about 4 or 5 days. And then earlier this week, Tuesday, I believe it was. Yeah, late Monday night, Tuesday morning, Anti-Flag released a statement. Rather, Justin Sane released a statement, and then Anti-Flag issued a statement, and they were issued in tandem together. I'll read all the statements all the way through. Justin Sane's statement is the following. Recently, there have been claims of sexual assault made against me, and I can tell you that these stories are categorically false. I've never engaged in sexual relationship that was not consensual, nor have I ever been approached by a woman after a sexual encounter and have been told that I had in any way acted without her consent or violated her in any way. Now that I have had a few days to absorb the initial shock, I am making a statement to set the record straight. Sexual assault is real and has a devastating impact on victims. I have devoted my entire adult life to standing up for these victims, as well as those suffering oppression and inequality who are victimized, demeaned, and abused. I've always been and will always be that person. The statements being told about me are the antithesis of what I believe and have and how I've conducted myself throughout my life. In regard to Anti-Flag disbanding as a band, the decision was made that under these circumstances it would be impossible to continue. I want to thank my family and friends and the many, many fans, musicians, and bands who have reached out to me to offer their support and help. And then here's the Anti-Flag statement, which was issued exact same time. A core tenet of the band Anti-Flag is to listen to and believe all survivors of sexual violence and abuse. The recent allegations about Justin are in direct contradiction to that tenet. Therefore, we felt the only immediate option was to disband. We've been shocked, confused, and saddened and absolutely heartbroken from the moment we heard these allegations. While we believe that this is extremely serious, in the last 30 years, we have never seen Justin be violent or aggressive towards women. This experience has shaken us to our core. We understand and apologize that this response may not have been quick enough for some people. This is new territory for all of us, and it is taking time for us to process the situation. It was a privilege for us to be in the band Anti-Flag as we seek to find our path forward. We wish healing to all survivors. Chris, and Pat. I guess notably, in Justin Sane's statement, he denies the accusations entirely. In the Anti-Flag statement, they don't necessarily say that. They don't that it's false, but they don't say that they think it's not false either. They take a very neutral stance. Basically, they say, I mean, they said they have never seen any evidence of Justin behaving inappropriately, but they don't really offer an opinion one way or another in the current scenario. A lot of punk rock fans, well, tons of punk rock fans were totally shocked and surprised. I don't really care about Anti-Flag, but I was shocked to see a band explode so rapidly and also for this kind of thing. And a lot of people are going back and forth. It seems like most people seem to feel that Justin, at least comment-wise, is guilty for what he's been accused of, although some people are taking a more neutral stance, if you will. It's a huge mess. I can only imagine what's like in the Anti-Flag side. They're a very big band, so obviously they have what's called an internal operating agreement or an internal band agreement. which basically controls how a band operates. And it probably has, well, actually, your general internal band agreement will have a clause like if somebody dies or if they go bankrupt or they quit the band, what happens? Most operating agreements traditionally have not had something if a member's been accused or found guilty of something morally scandalous. I couldn't fathom one way or another what the anti-flag internal operating agreement is. But since the band is over, that probably is a big issue, and they're probably figuring out who owns what and who's entitled to what money. Which a band, much like a corporation that has an operating agreement and is incorporated or has an LLC, it takes some time to value the assets and split up the band and figure out who gets what. So I'm sure that's a big part of what took Anti-Flag, a while to respond. Although, I mean, on the other hand, I don't know, is 5 days a while to respond? In 1985, 5 days would be extremely quick. But in the age of the internet, that scene is taking an eon. So there's a lot to unpack here, and we're not going to come up with any solutions on tonight's podcast, of course. But we can just kind of ponder things and I don't know, maybe take wild stabs if we want to. And more, what's your take on the situation? It's a real mess, that's for sure.
There's a lot to it. There's a lot going on. There's a lot that we know, and then there's a lot that we don't. The past few days, too, based off of the Enough podcast, there's been more people come forward with allegations, again, against an unnamed lead singer of a political punk band, and signs point to it being just insane. So there are even more people coming forward. I think we should always believe survivors, and we should have a support system for them, because it's something deeply traumatic, obviously, to have happen. And it's even worse when you talk about it, because people will attack you, and you'll get death threats and all these really, 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 really bad things. So we need to really support these people when they come forward and share their stories. I was surprised to see that Anti-Flag had broken up. I was surprised to see that they just deleted everything. Everything about this was surprising, because I've listened to Anti-Flag before. They were a band that I listened to a little bit when I was getting into punk. I never was super into them, but I know how many people that was their band for so long, you know what I mean? How many people found their sense of politics and everything from the band. And to have people who you thought were, or I guess to have a person that you thought was okay and who would stand up for you and who would fight for you, doing the absolute opposite is very jarring. And that's something that's really that's just, that just sucks. But the statements were interesting, because they were, like you said, released at the same time. They were released side by side. It's the same font, it's the same color scheme, it's the same everything. They obviously use the same person to craft the statements or to help with the statements. And with the Just Insane one, him denying it, and again, we don't know what actually happened, we don't know any of this, but something about his statement just felt really off to me. Something about it felt really fishy. I do want to know the bands that, because at the end he says the family, friends, bands that have supported me. I want to know who is supporting him and what their reasons for doing so are. And then the statement by the band, they're clearly distancing themselves from the situation. They're being we didn't know, we didn't have any idea. And that's a pretty, just the line, I've never seen the person in question behave aggressively or violently towards women. Well, people change when they're in public, and people change when they're in private. There are two different people. Again, if this is true, this could have been going on for so long and no one would have had any idea, because again, of the persona that you present, or that was presented to the world, right? And that's why in part it was so shocking. when everything came to light. 5 days, I thought that they would have a response quicker. And like you said, 100%, that's an internet thing. That's like, oh yeah, something happens, respond immediately. Obviously, if the rest of the band weren't aware of what was going on, again, what's going on that way, you need to take time to process it. You need to take time to figure out what you're going to do. But at the same time, these are people who have preached, like, believing survivors and fighting for people who speak up and all this kind of stuff. And it just seems a little disingenuous in one way, where it's like, if you practiced what you were preaching, you would know how to respond, I guess. Just my 5 cents there. But those are my thoughts on the matter.
Yeah. I mean, everyone kind of thought that the time frame was too long and the statements were real bad. I don't know if I felt that way, because, like, the band is hitting a particularly sensitive area, particularly for them, as opposed to, say, like if Guns N' Roses was accused of something, they'd be like, yeah, we're Guns N' Roses. You know what I mean? But, mm-hmm. like, Anti-Flag, this is core to their identity. So when the main guy gets accused of something, I mean, maybe they needed some time to look into the situation and figure out whether or not their boy is guilty or not, you know, or liable, or did what he's being accused of. So, I mean, I can't necessarily fault the band for taking 5 days, which I don't think is that long. I mean, if I got, God forbid, that I got accused of something, I would hope that my friends would look into it first before, you know, saying, you know, one thing or the other. So, mm-hmm. so I can kind of respect them for that. I thought that, I mean, I wasn't as offended. I mean, maybe there's a nuance I'm missing, but I mean, I thought the statements were, you know, very generic lawyer type. I'm not guilty, and everyone else is. We don't want any part of this. I don't know what people expected them to say. I guess because it is Anti-Flag, they were expecting a more heartfelt or genuine reaction. But I mean, I'm not surprised by that at all. Anti-Flag is a very big band. They're a corporate band. They're a pop band, essentially, or pop adjacent. You know, not pop, you know, close to it, frankly. I mean, if you listen, their music is very polished, very Disney-esque. So I'm not surprised by that statement at all. It's a bummer either way, because if it is true, then Justin Sane should be in jail. And if it's not true, then that really only hurts other survivors and that kind of a thing, you know. You know, I'm always torn in these situations, in that, you know, I definitely do believe in due process, in that you're innocent until proven guilty. But then again, that has also led to, you know, rape victims and sexual assault victims kind of being abused and damaged. So those two ideals are kind of almost at odds with each other, you know, due process. Like, I guess who's entitled to the more rights, or to, is it the accused party, or the victim? You know, I don't know. Traditionally, in American jurisprudence, it's guilty. I mean, innocent until proven guilty by beyond a reasonable doubt. So that means the accused has essentially more rights, I guess. So yeah, man, I don't know, man. It's an ugly situation. It's a bad situation, no matter how you dice it. I don't think the other three members, I think they did kind of what they should have done. You know, I can't really find too much fault with them. They're not going on the attack and saying she's lying, but they're not really, they're very mildly standing up for their guy. And, you know, we'll probably never, I mean, we never will know what's going to happen, what would happen, because we don't know when Anti-Flag talk. I mean, when I say that, I mean, in regards to the band breaking up, because we don't know what they talked about behind the scenes. It would be interesting, but we'll never know. And it's just an ugly situation. And it's kind of one of these quagmires that has no real answer, if you ask me. So yeah, that's the end of Anti-Flag. Let's see here. Here's something cool, though. Emor, tell us about Bad Mary.
Yeah. Bad Mary are a New York-based glam punk band. And they just released a video for I Just Called to Say Fuck You, which is off their recently released EP. First of all, it's a great song title. And the video is not inappropriate whatsoever, but YouTube has flagged anything that has fuck in the title to be inappropriate for children, which is ridiculous because it's like I understand words have power, words have weight and everything, but there's a lot more things that we need to be protecting children from than, you know, swear words in music. There's a lot more pressing concerns. There's, anyway, so the video itself is the lead singer, Amanda, in a field, and there's like some trees, and it's a nice wide open space, and like dancing around and singing and picking daisies and all this kind of stuff. And it's a very like cutesy video, and the song is there's like punky riffs, but like her voice is softer and kind of like softens the blow of the chorus and softens the blow of the lyrics, which if you like read them are pretty harsh. Songs that do that are really interesting. I really like songs that do that, where it sounds like one thing, but when you read the lyrics, it's actually another thing. There's a lot of really cool heavy bands that do, you think they're like death and destruction and all this, and then you read their lyrics and it's just like, you're great, you can do it, I love you, you know? And then you hear like some like pop music that sounds super polished, or more pop punky music that sounds super polished, and then you're like, ah, oh, this is fun. And then you read the lyrics. You're like, oh shoot, like that's something else. So I liked that. I liked the delivery of it. Fuck You is, well, another song that does that is Fuck You by Biff Naked, which is really, really good. It has a very like poppy soft vocal delivery. And then when you actually listen to it and read the lyrics, there's more to it. So yeah, sometimes you need to scream, but sometimes you just need to sing it and stuff too. And this is something that I think they did a neat job with. John, what did you think of Bad Mary?
I'm down for anything that has a Stevie Wonder homage in it. So I like to have this flip the famous Stevie Wonder song on its head. I dig it. Although I gotta say, it was kind of more dream pop than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like a super uber punk thing or something. But I definitely dig it. I think it's cool. So yeah, Bad Mary's a cool band. Let's see, what else do we have here? Right. Oh, Bad Cop, Bad Cop have released their first new music in 3 years. The new track is called Shattered, possibly an homage to the famous Rolling Stones song, but probably not. And it is the first track to include the new guitar player. Let me see here. I think we lost track of him. I think
Alex
her name is
Windsor.
Alex. So this is the first track to have Alex Windsor and not have Stacey Dee on it ever. So I mean, there was this whole thing in that, like, Stacey Dee. Wait, Stacey? Oh, Jenny. Jenny
Jenny,
Cotterell,
yeah,
rather. Not Stacey.
Stacy's still in
Jenny
the
Cotterell.
band.
Stacey's still in the band.
Yeah.
And so there was this whole thing, like, Jenny was like kind of, it became apparent that she might not be in the band. They had to fill in on tour, and they didn't issue a statement. And Bad Cop, Bad Cop's statement was like, well, we don't owe it to anybody to explain who is or who or isn't in the band, or maybe why someone isn't in the band right now. And a lot of people, like I know Brian Gorsegner of Nightbirds, who is Bad Cop, Bad Cop's booking agent, echoed that sentiment. I think Fat Records echoed that sentiment. And so the band really never announced that Jenny had left the band, and it's still not clear that she has left the band, at least maybe in a legal context or not. I don't know. Like sometimes someone won't go on tour with the band or even write music with the band, but it's still technically a shareholder in the band. Journey is the best example of that, is when you go see Journey now. I believe it's California. I think it's the LA area, but I'm not Sure. And so that kind of suggests that she's not in the band anymore, but nobody really, really knows. So some of the websites have officially said that Alex is in the band. I don't know if that's accurate, because I believe the press release said bad cop, and I believe they at least deserve to know. Some people kind of took the position that, and then I want to think to add, Oakley in the playing with the band, which is kind of different than being in the band, if you will. And more, what do you think of this track, and how much are fans entitled to know what's going behind the scenes with the band?
I think fans are entitled to know as much as the band wants to give them, because these are, again, unless something severe happens, in which case we kind of need to know what's going on. You know, like in the Anti-Flag case, we need to know what's going on. But with this, these are people, they have creative pursuits. Obviously, they're in a band. They have creative pursuits. They have other stuff going on, other life things. If they want to be open about what they're going through or what's going on, they can be. If they don't want to be, they don't have to be. I think it's completely up to them.
But do they have a right? Do they have a right to get annoyed then if fans ask what's going on?
I think if someone asks, there's a way to get around, like, kind of getting in, like, being annoyed. You can just say, well, you know, that's private business or whatever, and just kind of put that out there. I know there's a lot of speculation, and I know that can lead to even more speculation if you respond very vaguely, but you're still protecting your privacy and the privacy of the other people in the band if that's what you want to do, if that's what your aim is. It could be that they're just not ready to talk about it right now. It could be that things are in the works. There's a lot of moving parts, and they'll talk about it when they're ready, which might be in a week, it might be in a month, it might be in a year. But yeah, I think it's completely up to the band and whatever, because like, we're fans of a band and we want the best for the band, but we don't want to be like Kathy Bates in Psycho, you know? Or not Psycho, sorry. The one, what's the, it's a Stephen King book.
Misery.
There we go. Misery. Thanks. Yeah, we don't want to be like that, yeah. Where you get obsessed. You know, like, tell me every detail of your life and, you know, I must know everything. I think it's admirable when people in the public eye who just want to live their lives, do this, obviously when it's not harming anybody. And I think this is just, you know, if they say what's going on, they say what's going on. If they don't, they don't. Stuff will come out at some point, or it won't.
See, I think it won't. See,
yeah.
I think it won't. I will agree. Why? Because I'll get that. So anyway, so let me step back. I agree that a band certainly doesn't owe people an explanation as to why someone left the band. I think one of the fundamental fictions of a band is when people follow a band with personality. Like let's use AC/DC as an example. AC/DC,
sure.
Growing up, I thought they were a gang. Like, I thought Angus and Bon or Angus and Brian hung out, and it was the AC/DC boys. And you listen to the songs, like, oh man, here's a song about AC/DC going to a bar and getting in a bar fight. Or here's a song about AC/DC trying to hook up with girls and getting shot down in flames. Oh, AC/DC, you guys are crazy, you know? And then later on you learn, no, actually AC/DC kind of stopped being a gang in like 1978 and was strictly a business after that. And so when people develop a certain attachment to a band and often feel like this band is speaking for me or this band is speaking directly to me, they kind of feel like they have maybe not necessarily ownership of the band, but they're connected to a band. So because the band, Jeff Rosenstock is maybe a great example. You know, Jeff Rosenstock, especially when you appear at the end of the music industry, like the first two Jeff Rosenstock albums, people felt like Jeff Rosenstock is speaking to me. He's writing for me. You know, he is writing the things that I'm thinking inside. And so fans, incorrectly perhaps, feel as though they have some sort of connection they do have their own emotional, let me phrase it. The fans do have their own emotional investment in the band, you see. And so when the band changes something that it feels as though that emotional investment may be lessened or changed or whatever. The band never agreed to that deal necessarily, but the fans did. And so that's perhaps why a band might get annoyed or weirded out, especially because fans can definitely get creepy. That all of that, so certainly a band doesn't owe anybody an explanation they don't want to give for sure. That being said, the reality of the matter is, if you've got a band where you know people use you as an identity, or you know, a band like Journey, like no one feels like Journey, you speak to me. So when Journey changes a member, no one gives a shit because they really just want to sing "Don't Stop Believing," you know. Or even a band like Discharge. Like, no one's like, Discharge is speaking to my heart. You know, Discharge speaks to politics, you know. How dare Margaret Thatcher do this? So when they change a band, it doesn't really change your emotional investment in the band, because there's no fiction that the band is a gang or a unit or anything like that. So when a band that does have emotional investment from the fans, like Jeff Rosenstock, like Bad Cop, like, let me think of another example, like maybe even Screaming Females, then fans, I guess, are shocked and saddened when a core of that changes. So the practical matter is, even if a band doesn't want to get into personal stuff, then that's okay, but they should probably, this is a good case example, they probably should have some sort of a battle plan to avoid that, because otherwise the fact of the matter is, there is going to be baseless speculation. Are people fighting? Is it a health issue? Is someone just have their own business at home and they can't take time off from work? There's all these different wild speculations going out there, and ignoring it won't make it go away at first. But let me get into that in a second. That being said, it's so easy to come up with, well, Monday Morning Quarterback, it's so easy to come up and say, oh, so-and-so just isn't touring right now, or we're going to have this person standing in right now just because we want to try them out, or whatever. There's any number of kind of vague-ish but conclusive statements you can issue to avoid blind speculation, which can get worse and worse and is annoying. That being said, I think what Bad Cop is doing here is, I think they were kind of caught maybe a little off guard, and who knows what's going on behind the scenes. I would expect a more unified statement if they were getting along, but I could be wrong. So I think what they're trying to do is, I think they're just trying to get over the wave and basically not respond and just punch through the waves for the next 6 months, 8 months, and eventually people will just get worn out from asking and accept the new band as it is. So I think that's what the plan is right now. And that's just my blind speculation, you know. I can't fault fans for wanting to know what's going on with the members of some of their favorite bands and why. Oh, you know, totally. If you go see AC/DC, Young isn't there, that's kind of a bummer. But I can't fault the band for wanting to keep it, you know. It could be any number of things as to why some people aren't in the band, you know. And it can be very personal stuff. I know one of my clients, I'm trying to remember what one people were like, why isn't so-and-so playing live right now? And at the time it was a health thing, you know, and you tell people about like your health. Or another example, I had another client that was going to go on a tour and they dropped off a tour, and people were like, well, why so-and-so drop off? Well, it's because she was pregnant. But you don't want to tell the whole world you're pregnant at like 2 months. You know what I mean? That's weird.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it can be bad luck. You know, so it could be like, I mean, it could be any number of things, and it could be any number of private things that the public isn't entitled to. So I think more than anything, it's the case study in that it's good to have some kind of vague statement prepared to shut people down before they get out of hand, you know. But hindsight's 2020. No, nobody makes all the right choices all the time, you know. Bad Cop is a cool band. I dig the track. And they're all nice women. I like them all. I just think – I don't think he's a bad guy here. I just think both sides were kind of caught by surprise, Frank.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. It sounds like it. The song is good, though. The song sounds cool. The video's kind of fun. It's like the band's uplifting everyone.
Bad Cop, definitely good band. And more, should we play Bad Mary or Bad Cop, Bad Cop?
Let's do Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
All right. How about both, Emmore? How about we play both? What do you think of that?
Sure. I'm up for both. Hell yeah.
All right. This is Bad Mary and Bad Cop. And we'll be right back. We'll be right back. And we're going to talk about another useful, another youthful figure, another, another new band on the scene, the Alice Cooper Band. Alice Cooper Band has got a new album coming out. I think we've talked about it before a little bit more.
We did.
Road is out August 25 via Ear Music. The whole album is basically about life on the road. Alice has released a second song called White Line Frankenstein, which I always thought, like, Emmore, Motorhead's White Line Fever is about cocaine, right?
I always thought it was. Yeah.
Let me Google the lyrics real quick.
I'm pretty positive Motorhead, it's about cocaine. White Line.
I mean, it's got to be, but let me just Google the lyrics. We can move around now. Motorhead is like one of the greatest bands ever, but sometimes when you read the lyrics out loud, you're like, what? So we can move around now. You know it's so good, but I know you want to come clean now, baby, even if you could. White Line Fever. White Line Fever made me a believer now. White Line Fever. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Take it's about me away cocaine. From you.
Just come to me, babe. We can stay right here. But you don't remember me, honey, because of all you've done this year. White Line Fever. So definitely about cocaine. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, and more, when I first heard this song, first of all, I liked it. It's not the greatest, greatest song ever, but I definitely liked it. We'll delve into more of that in a second. But I thought that White Line Frankenstein was an homage to Motorhead's Life Fever and about being on cocaine. But now looking at the video and the content of the album, being on the road, it seems to me that he's talking about lines in the road. But do you think it's a purposeful double entendre? Do you think that's what it is?
Ooh, yes,
fun fact,
I do.
Emmore's learning French. So, Emmore, how do I say entendre? How do I say entendre?
Just like that. But give it a little sauce.
So, wait, Emmore, what do you think? How do I say sauce in French? Let's see. Sauce.
Sauce.
Sauce in French. Why are you learning French, Em? Just because you want to learn it? Oh, it's sauce.
It's sauce.
French is sauce.
Yeah.
They like that.
You have a little accent. Yeah.
Why are you learning French? Just because you want to?
I took French until grade 9 because it's compulsory. And then at grade 9, I stopped. And when I was getting ready to go to Poos, I was like, oh, shoot, I should actually brush up. So I've been, like, relearning it. I won't be terrible. and hopefully can carry a conversation. But, yeah, no, I couldn't take it after grade 9. It was too much. But it's a cool language. You learn lots. You get to hear different pronunciations. It's all fun. Get to understand more people. So nothing wrong with that. But yeah, the White Line Frankenstein, I think, is a double entendre. Because double entendre. Because he's driving all night. To stay up all night, you usually take some form of upper, right? Like,
you take uppers when you're driving on the night?
I don't, but like caffeine's an upper, or well, okay, caffeine is that thing, right? So like in a legal sense, right? You're taking uppers if you need to stay up or whatever. You're taking stimulant because caffeine is stimulant. So with this, it's like, ooh, I'm on the road, I'm badass, I'm rock and roll, I'm watching the white line so I don't go off onto the shoulder of the road, but also I've done some white lines to make it through the night. That's kind of how I took the song, and obviously not advocating drug use, but that was, because what is it, like the second verse, there was something in, I think the second one where it seemed like, no, it was the first thing. I got a load up my nose.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's pretty tough to argue that away.
Yeah, and it's, like, kind of right at the beginning. It's like, ooh, okay. There we are. We're in for it. But I do. I think it's both. An image of a Frankenstein snorting cocaine is kind of all that comes to mind, just with the name of it. It's not, though. Well, it kind of is. It's both. Tom Morello's guitar solo is pretty cool. I like his guitar solo.
Not to be that guy, but I've heard the album, and it's real good, honestly. It's definitely one of his better later day albums, for sure. Alice has actually been kind of a hot streak lately. I thought Detroit Stories was great. This album, I think, is real good. I like the song. What's interesting is I've heard the album. The two singles they debuted so far are kind of the least hard rocking. Usually you think they'd open up with like the Barnstormer, but they really haven't. They're kind of taking the slow burn effect, ooh, which is cool. I think if I was them, I would have picked some of the harder tracks to open the announcer with, though. But it's cool. I mean, the album is cool. I dig it. I dig Alice. And there's going to be not one, but two, count them, two interviews with Alice Cooper coming up.
What?
Soon. One is me interviewing Alice, Q&A style, about the new album. The second is me interviewing Alice, Dennis Dunaway, and Neil Smith about the Schools Out and Killer reissues. So a lot of Alice Cooper content coming at Punk News.
Exciting.
And do you think Alice was cool or was a dick?
In life? Or
no, I mean on in the interview.
Oh, I think he was cool. He seems like a relatively chill person. Was he cool or was he a dick?
He was real cool. He was cool. No, he was real cool. I don't want to spill the beans too much, but like Alice does a lot. Well, actually, he actually doesn't do that many interviews. He does interviews and like he says a lot of things and people just say, yes, I agree. So true, Alice. And Alice has a couple of things that I don't really jive with him about. And I'm very proud of myself. I mean, and I would say my interview game right now is pretty good. It's not as I'm not at the top of my game interview wise, you know. So I said, you know, I'm going to do one of my favorite dudes ever, but I'm going to do a real interview. And I pushed back a little bit. And he respected that, and it was a great interview. And it was cool.
That's awesome.
And honestly, he clarified some things that were kind of bumming me out. And I'm glad he did. And now I'm way less bummed out. So and I wasn't even really that bummed out, but that's annoyed by it. But he was super cool. And Alice is the man, for sure.
Is that in the interview? Is that a spoiler? The stuff that was cleared up?
Me pushing back is in the interview. I didn't tell him he was doing things that were annoying me. but my pushback is definitely in the interview. So Alice rocks, man. Here's another band that rocks, Devo. And here's the big mystery Devo quest that Em and I were talking about before the show. Devo has announced I'm going to just read this verbatim right now, farewell tour celebrating 50 years of de-evolution. I can't believe Devo's been around for 50 years. That's really crazy when you think about it. Right now, they've got really only about 2 weeks worth of shows, but really only a week of seven shows. For the West Coast kicking off in November. I saw Devo at not the last Punk Rock Bowling, but the one before, and it was incredible. It was absolutely, I actually thought it was going to be kind of bad because, you know, they're a little older. They've been around a while. They haven't had a really great album in a while. And they just came out and just destroyed the place. I mean, they were a headliner. They knew they were a headliner. And they came to show everyone why they are a headliner, and they were really amazing live. They really were amazing. But here's the weird thing. So if you look at the poster for this tour, it says Devo, 50 Years of Evolution, and then lists all the tour dates. But the caption from 3 days ago says, just announced, Devo have added the following concerts to the farewell tour celebrating 50 Years of Evolution, blah, blah, blah. Then they posted an almost identical thing just a day ago. Devo have added the following concerts to their upcoming tour celebrating 50 years of de-evolution. No final tour, like the other ones, or farewell tour. So, Em, is it the farewell tour of Devo? What's going on? What's the deal?
I'm very confused. Because when I saw the farewell tour in the caption on the first one, I looked into it because I was like, well, is it, like, it would be a huge deal if Devo's, like, their final shows, right? Like, it would be massive. And it was okay. It's nowhere has like Devo retires from touring, you know, nowhere has like these giant proclamations. It's not anywhere. So I was like, okay, is it a joke somehow? Is it like a reference? Is it something like going on that way, you know? Is it not to be taken at face value? Is it just the name of the tour to get people kind of up in arms and maybe like, oh shoot, I better see Devo while I still can, you know? But to have it taken out makes me think that it's not their final tour. I think that when Devo do announce their final tour dates, there's going to be a lot more like hype around them. There's going to be a lot of things going on and maybe more reissues or something. I think when they do retire, it's going to be a big blowout. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, here's where it gets even trickier. Is Viva La Rock magazine?
Yes.
Yeah, Viva La Rock magazine. It's a pretty good magazine. It's one of these UK music music magazines. Which honestly, like UK music magazines are cool, but they unlike Rolling Stone in its heyday or even not that long ago, like it's almost written like a fanzine. It's always positive. Yeah. They never push back and never really give a true portrait. You know, it's almost more fact based than it is analysis, if you will. So anyway, Viva La Rock magazine have Devo on the cover, and it says Spud Boy sign off with their final tour. That's on the cover of the July Viva La Rock. So, but then, I would think that, Devo is a massively huge band. I would think if they're doing a final tour, like, we'd be getting bombarded nonstop. There'd be interviews all over about it. You know, I really am confused. Let me see what the Club Devo website says real quick. So I'm really confused. If I really, really had to guess, I'm going to say maybe they were thinking about doing a final tour, but they're already backing off that idea. But then again, on the other hand, final tour doesn't even necessarily mean final tour anymore, because like Elton John and Ozzy, they've all gone on quote final tours. Oh, but we'll still be doing festivals and one-off dates. So it's final tour used to mean we're not doing any more live shows. Now it just means we're not doing any more massive tracks. You know what I mean? So who knows?
For sure.
I'm confused, Dan.
Well, I didn't know about the Vive La Rock thing.
Okay.
There's a lot going on.
We got one more story. Sinead O'Connor has passed away. Oh, what's that? I'm actually going to buy the Viva La Rock, and I'll be very interested to see what it says, you know.
Yeah, let me know.
Colby. Sinead O'Connor has passed away. It was very much a surprise. She was 56. Yeah. Her family said it is with great sadness that we announced the passing of our beloved Sinead. Her family and friends are devastated and have requested privacy at this very difficult time. It's no secret that Sinead has been having mental health issues, drastic mental health issues, over the past 10 or 15 years. She went missing for a couple of days and they found her, and she posted some unsettling things online over the past few years. So she was definitely struggling with mental health issues for sure. I think Sinead is one of these artists aside from the mental health issue, you haven't really heard people cover her music stuff for a while. Now online, everyone's like, Sinead was the greatest. She was so great, which may be true. What's your stance on Sinead? Unfairly overlooked or people kind of retconning opinion? What's your stance on Sinead O'Connor? And I don't know, any words about Sinead?
I do, yes. I think she was treated very unfairly by the music industry, and I think she was being treated very unfairly by the public. Because there was a clear before the Pope picture was ripped up and a clear after. And what she said, and ripping up the Pope picture and what she said with like fight the real enemy and all this kind of stuff, that was, she knew what was going on. She took the platform, took the chance to say it. And there, I've seen a quote circulate just saying like, I never, doing that, I didn't ruin my career. I ruined the career of the people who like, were like who wanted the house in Antigua and all this kind of stuff off of me. And it's like, I stay true to my ideals, and I think that's something that is extremely powerful and is extremely, extremely important, especially now. And I think she really just was treated horribly, and very talented person. Her voice is timeless. There's so much in her voice. There's so much pain, there's so much hope, there's so much love, there's so much everything in her voice, and just so powerful. And again, living, going through all of this stuff, I remember seeing when her son took his own life last year. There was a video of her on being interviewed, and it was one of the most like vulnerable I've ever seen anybody. She opened herself up and talked about the pain and talked about everything, and everything. It's difficult because there were so many like struggles in her life, but I don't think she should be defined by those. She had a lot of other things. She had a lot more than pain. She took that and turned it into something. One thing that I found interesting was a post on Facebook a couple days before she passed away was mentioning her finishing up a new album. It gonna be out in like 2024, and then planning a tour in 2025. And it seemed like very hopeful for the future and working through stuff. So again, there's no cause of death given. We don't know what happened. And if the family doesn't disclose that, that's completely and totally fine. But Sinead O'Connor was a very, very powerful person, and just, she deserves so much better.
Well, they have it, and more with some nice parting words for Sinead O'Connor. And okay, so I don't, should we close out with a Sinead O'Connor track, Em? What do you want to do?
I think so. That's fitting.
What do you want to play?
Do you want to play a song that's going to make everyone cry?
Yes.
Okay. It is called The Last Day of Our Acquaintance. And it's from, well, just listen to it. There you go.
This is the last day of our acquaintance. I will meet you later in somebody's office. I'll talk, but you won't listen to. This is the last day of- know your answer already.